Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
And good morning. My name is Dave Kubikin.
And good morning. I'm Jean Marie Schaefer.
Hi, Jean Marie. Jean Marie and I are here every weekend talking about estate planning and Medicaid planning, everything from powers of attorney to wills to more complicated trusts. And it's a call-in show where you can reach us at 518-476-5900. If you want to come into one of our offices, you may reach us at Albany and Clifton Park, Saratoga Springs, down in Kingston. And if you want an appointment, you could always call our office at 518-465-7581. I know that's the number because I wrote it down before we started the show, Jean Marie, so that way I wouldn't forget. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. It's been so, you know, the show was off for the last two weekends because of the holidays.
Right.
Well, we could have been here probably, but, you know, who wants to be here during the holidays?
No, you're having family fun.
Yeah. Right? So how's your holiday?
Yeah. Fantastic. It was great. Went by too fast. That's the problem. Don't you see? You know what I mean? You have the same problem. I, you know, but I'm older, so I think maybe time just goes that way for me. I don't know.
No, to me, I think it went pretty fast. Now it's like January. We're going to be in January for 2 months, it feels
like. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it's Halloween, and then all of a sudden it's Christmas in New Year's.
Well, you know, they start decorating around Halloween.
That's right.
That's crazy.
And by the way, Easter stuff is out now.
Is it really?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. Just in case you wanted to know.
I didn't even know there were a lot of Easter stuff, but
there is.
How was your holiday, Jean Marie?
It was good. It went fast also.
The boys all were home?
Yep, the boys were home. Not as many presents when they're bigger, you know.
You're in the in-between stage. I was talking to a client about this past week where they're, you know, it's what do you want for Christmas?
Mandatory. Yeah, I ask them what they want, and usually it's something expensive, and I give them a gift card.
You know? There you go.
Yeah. Not that exciting.
So post New Year's, my wife had a birthday. Happy birthday, Isabel. And so we went on New Year's Day, we went to New York City.
Fun. Right? Fun.
It was cool. We were there for one evening, and that was it. And then came back up with the kids. And we went to see a Broadway show. We saw The Lion King. If you've never seen it, it's amazing. Like every animal is a person that is
right.
It's amazing. I had a document signing yesterday, Jean Marie, and I asked the client, what you do for New Year's? How's your New Year's? And they said, well, it was good. We went to New York City. I said, oh, that's great. You were there a couple days? Yeah. So what do you do? Well, we went to a show. What show did you go to? They said, The Lion King. I said, oh, what day did you go? What time did you go? What row were you sitting in? We were about 20 feet away from them.
Oh, my gosh.
For really? The show, unbeknownst to us.
That
what
is
a small world.
Small world. That's crazy.
That's cool.
Yeah. Crazy.
Also, how crazy, when my kids were young, it was Lion King, the movie that we saw and watched all the time. And now with your children, you're seeing it on Broadway a little different.
It is. It's unbelievable. I mean, unbelievably expensive as well. But the live entertainment like that, the way they design it all, man. Mm-hmm. Someone's way more creative than we are, that's for sure.
Yes.
We just do wills and stuff like that.
But we do creative wills.
Sometimes, I think.
Sometimes, we do, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of creative crisis plans. Actually, I have a long list here, Jean Marie, of what do you want to talk about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could choose one through five on topics. But I did want to start with one for sure, which we covered about a month ago, and Harry and I covered about 3 weeks ago, which is, it's now January. The limits, the thresholds for income and assets for qualifying for Medicaid are different than they were a month ago, with huge ramifications.
And it's the first, well, it's the largest jump in years.
It's a big,
in years.
Big
it's a huge jump. You know, every year it goes up maybe $100 or so, and we talk about it, and okay, that's nice.
Yeah.
This is a, like, major, major change, you know, almost double.
And I think the area of long-term care that impacts the most, where the change will, our clients will feel the change the most, is probably for home care, because, you know, in a nursing home situation, we're not usually able to protect a lot of income. So if the income limits, you know, went up, that wouldn't be a huge deal for us. In nursing home Medicaid, we're stuck with $50 and that's it.
That's right. And we can't change that.
Right. So. But for home care, if you go from, say, $953, $54 like it was to something like $1,563, that's which is what it now is, that's an unbelievable jump. That's almost a $600 jump in what you're allowed to have every month without having to then get a little more complicated to preserve the money. Because you know, I know, John knows, we all know, for home care, there's no such thing as earning too much money, and we can protect every dollar of income when you are still home. People don't know that, John, because they hear Medicaid, and they think five-year look back, and then they say, oh my God, my neighbor told me, my financial advisor told me, my accountant told me, somebody told me, no, dad earns too much money. No such thing.
Just to kind of tie into that, I just want to shout out to our clients who watch all our webinars. They're so well prepared. So I was meeting with a client talking about community Medicaid, and she came in and she had all these notes, and I'd be saying something and she'd be shaking her head. And I'm like, okay. And then
checking off the box of...
Right. And then I'd say, and then we talked about the income, and I said, yes, it's been raised a lot, you know. This year, and before I could even say the amount, she said $1,563. Yep. And then she had watched our webinar in preparation before coming into the meeting and had taken notes.
That's fantastic.
That was really great.
Yeah. Far more educated clients are always a good thing.
Yes.
With this actual change on the income side, it's going to mean that when we have imperfect care situations and we're saying, gee, how are we going to... We have this lovely lady that can help out dad at $25 an hour. Mm-hmm. Medicaid doesn't want to pay her $25 an hour. The more income you have without any strings on it, without any rules on it, the more of that income you could use to give to a caregiver to make up a difference, for example, from what Medicaid pays them. You could find new caregivers. It's just, you could pay for more stuff without anyone really keeping track of it. So I think it's a huge, probably... a larger impact for our clients day to day than the asset change, which we'll talk about in a second. The income change for home care, big, big deal.
Yeah, that's a big change because someone who is right around the point where it was a smaller spend down amount, it's a pain, right? To have to do it when it's only $100 or $200. I mean, it's certainly worth it when you're saving more than that. So this is going to put a lot of people above that limit where they don't have to do that.
Absolutely, Jamie. And if you are doing home care, sounds great. You still have a home to pay for or an apartment to pay for and life to pay for, right? A nursing home, the brick and mortar, 24/7, it's covered. Mm-hmm. Home care, it's all you. So losing $200 of your household income, if you go, let's say in December last year, Jamie, if you had a client whose income was $1,150 and they stand to lose $200 a month, oh, what's $200? That's 19%, 18% of their income gone, right?
Right.
So that's a big deal.
That's a big deal. So now for them to have that under their own control without going through the trust, that's fantastic.
There'll be more successful plans with that change. You know, in the past, we've talked about this look back period that may be started for home care. And I know I've always commented that that's a very short-term thing that Medicaid is short-sighted, rather, that the government's doing because they're going to make it harder to qualify for home care, which means more people will need to qualify for nursing home care. And because we're very creative and people plan ahead of time more and more, it's going to do the reverse impact. Instead of saving money, it's going to cost more money to the state because more people will unnecessarily be in nursing homes. Finally, there's a change that helps people stay at home, that makes it financially more feasible to stay at home, which is great because when people are at home, what the government pays for is just hours of care. Your client is still going to pay for their National Grid bill and their cable bill. So,
yeah, it's cheaper.
It's a win-win.
It's cheaper to get home care for the government because you're paying all the housing costs, you're paying the food costs. So it's a... better for everyone all around. It's better for the client.
For sure.
Who wants to go to an institution?
No, nobody wants it.
No one wants it. Everyone wants to stay at home. And there's better health outcomes, right, if you stay at home.
Yeah. All that being said, if Kim was here in the third seat here, she'd say, listen, you're making it sound too easy, guys, because then it's who's the providers of care. It's all about having the options for home care, freeing up the income for home care. On the asset side, another huge jump. Used to be, what, $16,800? Mm-hmm. In a normal year, maybe that would have gone to $17,100 or something like that, a $300 bump.
Right.
But the new number, I don't know where they get these, by the way. $16,800, you would think a nice round number. Nope, $28,133. So, big jump. Big,
it's a huge
big
jump. You're right. I don't know why they didn't round it up, but it's a huge jump.
That means your asset limitation. You're going to have more cash in the bank, let's say, more money at your fingertips, more of a fund just in case, you know, what happens. Yeah, that a client can play with now as well. It means that if you have, you know, a fact pattern where a client comes in and they need a nursing home, Jamie, and they had $40,000, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
In the old rules, we're going to lose about $24,000.
That's right.
In the new rules, they're only 12 over, and maybe they could prepay funeral.
Right.
And maybe there's, you know, of course, a legal fee involved. Maybe they're going to repair some things in the house that is already protected because they did do a trust 5 years ago. It's real, you know, it's a real $11,000 we're going to save pretty much overnight, which
well,
is great.
Speaking of the house repairs, I like that because $28,000 means you have a big cushion for house expenses.
Because
that's something people always worry about when they set up a trust is, what if I need to, you know, put a new furnace in, put a new roof on the house, right?
Yeah.
And this helps. Now you have that cushion that you could use it out of your own money before we have to go through, you know, the process of a partial revocation of a trust.
That's right. Also, you know, these numbers, this $28,000 figure, that's for the applicant.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a spouse, they have their own allowance. Their allowance is about $76,000.
Mm-hmm.
You combine the two, and now our clients can have a decent amount, over $100,000, mm-hmm. outside the trust, and feel pretty comfortable that if one of them needs a nursing home, we're good.
That's right.
That's mm-hmm. huge for us. Of course, once one of them goes downhill or doesn't exist anymore, we're down to that $28,000 threshold. Used to be $16,000. So you don't want to be too far over, but it allows more flexibility. So people who are you know, on the fence about doing a trust, knowing that they have access to more money immediately or don't have to put it in the trust and are not losing any protection, that makes them a lot more comfortable.
Right. I mean, how many of your consults are spent after we talk, the client agrees to the trust, about how much money to put into the trust?
I had this conversation this week. So what do you normally tell people?
Well, if they're married, I go through the thing, like you said, the $100,000. But then I said, it's really, you know, how much do you feel comfortable with, right? Because everyone has a different comfort level. I mean, I have lots of clients who come in that have ridiculous amounts of money in their checking account.
Yeah.
Just because they feel more comfortable having that money there. So those clients are probably going to want to keep more money out, right, just to keep, you know. But, you know, other clients realize, okay, I could always get the money if I need it. Or it also depends on your income, right? Some people have, okay, my income is meeting all my needs, so I don't really need a cushion.
Right.
Right.
So on that point, it's really important for the clients, you know, when they understand that they do have access to the money in the trust, big picture, mm-hmm. it's not direct access. Right. Right? That wouldn't be allowed. But that, let's say, if the house gets sold that they live in, and now they're in an expensive apartment, at the closing, they could partially revoke the trust with the help of their puppets, their trustees, their beneficiaries, mm-hmm. to pull money out. They could use that money to then pay for rent. I'm usually with you with what's comfortable, what's not going to keep you up at night.
Right.
What are your plans the next 5 years? Are we planning on giving more to our kids? The client that I had this discussion with, they're doing quite well. They're not doing so well that they don't have to worry about long-term care costs. And they're in the mode now. Their two boys are just out of school. They're going to start doing the gifting annually.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's wonderful. You're creating a pattern. And they said, are we allowed? Should we give to our kids? I said, whatever you want to do, do. Do not be handcuffed by the fear that one day there might be a five-year look back. If you want to give, give. Right. Don't give because of Medicaid. Give because you want to give and mm-hmm. see the joy in your kids as they spend it on rims for their car or whatever they're going to do with it. Just give. But if you're planning on doing that, we know that. So let's have an extra 50 grand out over the next 5 years. If you're planning on a lot of big trips, it's our turn to finally travel now. The kids are out of the house. We want to see the world. Budget for it. Have plenty of money out. We're about to buy a new car. Great. So let's not put the car money into the trust just to pull it out 4 months later. It doesn't make sense. But these new caps allow for that larger cushion that you were mentioning.
Right.
And in getting to a comfort level for our clients, I mean, these numbers don't make the trust a better idea or a worse idea. It just makes it a little more easy to deal with the fact that we do have a trust, which is wonderful.
Right. And I think to your point that if you're going to keep money out, I also follow up by telling them, spend it, right? That money is there for you to spend.
Yeah.
If you're telling me, I'm never going to spend, I only, spend my income every month, then we usually have the conversation about putting more money into the trust.
Right.
Right. But if you have plans and you're spending money, that's your money. Keep it out and spend it.
Sometimes our client, Jamie, they're 71 years old, mm-hmm. and they're fine with their income, and then we have to mention to them, well, when you turn 72, you might start taking some distributions from your retirement. So maybe your plan in the next several years is to add to the trust every year with that excess income. I mean, some people are sitting at home thinking, if only I had excess income every month to just throw into my trust. But you could be our first caller at 518-476-5900. I'm looking at the clock behind you, Jamie, and in a week, we will have just come out of our halfway break because we're going to go from an hour-long show mm-hmm. to a info-packed.
That's right.
It's going
half an hour
fly
show.
By.
It's going to fly by.
Yeah.
So we're going to be starting our show for the rest of January at least, and we'll see how it goes at 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. and end at 8:30, mm-hmm. and have a little minute break or so in between in the middle of the hour, and it's going to allow us to kind of laser focus on a topic or two. Every single show, and then hopefully get some callers that'll take us off topic.
That's right.
From time to time.
No, it's going to be great. We'll also have some guests on to focus on specific topics, so it's going to be really informative. And
I don't know when next time the two of us will be on together, Jamie.
Could it be next week?
It might be next week. We'll see. We'll see. So I wrote down here three topics, Jamie. And, we might have a caller in here. So I'll just tell you what the topics are. Okay. And then after the call, we'll decide what we want to do. So topic number one, the words are, it's only going to get worse. That's the first mm-hmm. topic. Hmm. Topic two is online powers of attorney. Mm-hmm. And topic three is good old-fashioned crisis planning. Mm-hmm. So I if we didn't have a caller calling in right now, what would you be picking out of these three topics?
I feel like this is Jeopardy, right? So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, what would
we're
it
playing
be?
Jeopardy. Well, I think I would take number two for $500.
The online powers of attorney for $500. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get to that, but we're going to get to Paul in Balsam Spa first. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you. If there's a home and a trust and both parties of the trust pass away, how do you move that home to the new owner of the property?
So let's ask you a quick question. On this trust, are you guys the trustees at the beginning or is someone else the trustee?
We're the trustees in the beginning.
Okay.
So they both pass away.
Yeah.
And now the home's in the trust. What is the mechanism to have that home move to the owner?
Very good. So the mechanism is just a basic deed, and the question is going to be who is going to sign the deed. It's a deed from the trust to the new owner. Who is going to be signing that deed? And the answer would be the backup trustee. Hopefully that trust has a backup trustee on it. All of our trusts will have backup trustees. We're doom and gloom all the time. So we're expecting and planning. So in this instance, the trust ends when the two creators of the trust pass, right? So because of that, we're going to need someone who's a signatory for the trust, and that would be a backup trustee. The next question would be, well, if we don't have a stated backup trustee and the trust is silent about what happens when a trustee becomes incapacitated or dies or anything like that, then we're going to have to go based on, you know, family tree and try to find people who have a higher priority to become a trustee just for this singular act of terminating the trust and deeding the property away.
Supposing we have a trustee for the trust.
There you go. That's the person, and they'll just sign a deed from the trust to the beneficiary.
Okay, now, where do you get this deed?
So, if the house is in the trust,
yes,
that means that once upon a time there was a deed recorded with the county clerk transferring the property from you to your trust.
That's done.
So we'd go off of that deed to create the new deed. That every deed has a description of property that says, you know, to make sure that the meets and bounds are correct and make sure that the party doing the giving is correct and the party doing the getting is correct. And so law firms, you know, like us, we prepare the deeds.
Okay, so you're saying that in order to do this, the trustee of the trust has to go to a law office and have that performed?
Probably the best idea. Could you try to do a deed on your own? I suppose you could, but really you'd go to an attorney.
Okay. That's the answer. You need to go to an attorney and have that...
A new deed drawn up.
Yes. Okay. All right. That's the answer.
Very good.
Very good. Thank you very
Thanks,
much.
Paul.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. So, Jamie, I'm going to add a fourth topic to the list here. So, number one, that's a great question, by the way, from Paul. So, number one was only going to get worse. You didn't pick that. You picked the second one for $500, which is online powers of attorney. Crisis planning. And the new topic is... Paul's question and why we avoided probate when Paul asked this question, which is a good one. So with this new information here, are we still going online powers of attorney for $500? I like it.
Yeah, we're still doing that for $500.
Very good.
Okay.
So online powers of attorney, Jamie, they exist. I don't know if you knew that. And someone can go and they can download a power of attorney. And they could even use the Google machine, John, and put in their power of attorney New York, and there'll be some link for some form.
Oh, that's how it should be. Nice and easy.
So they say.
However.
We have an existing client, Jane Marie, where we're doing a community Medicaid. And all of a sudden, Stacy came into my office and said, blank clients here. They need to meet with you immediately. It's very important. Mm-hmm. It's about a power of attorney.
Oh.
And I'm saying, we're not even doing a power of attorney for them. Right. I don't understand. So I go in and they said... This is not about what we were here before. This is a new thing. I said, okay. And one of their family members is in a hospital, not doing well. I'm going to be heading to a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
Really not doing well. They tried to use a power of attorney. And they said, this power of attorney is not working. And I look at it, and it looks like the right form.
Mm-hmm.
It's got all the right language in it. It had something called a statutory gifts rider in it.
Oh.
Okay. Meaning that it is a power of attorney from prior to June 13th, 2021.
That's the problem there.
The power of attorney they had, they signed and was initialed. The gifting rider was not completed, which is problem A. But problem B is that the power of attorney itself was signed on December of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And they had taken it to a financial institution who said, we cannot accept this.
Mm-hmm.
And they were beside themselves, and they said, Dave, what do we do here? And I looked, I said, did you guys get this online? And they put their heads down and said, yes. I said, all right. Well, the problem is that you have a perfectly valid power of attorney that went out of date in June, and you signed it in December. So the form is the incorrect form, and there's nothing I could do to make them not reject it.
That's right.
Oh, wait a minute. You know, their uncle, he's got dementia. He's kind of in and out. Well, I said, well, so you're going to tell me what room he's in at St. Peter's, and we'll try to get lightning in a bottle if he happens to have his capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's possible, by the way. Just because it's possible. It's also very likely he doesn't, in which case we'd do the G word, guardianship.
A bad thing.
Now, they saved money in December of 2021 when they downloaded the wrong form.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to cost them a lot of money because in December they downloaded the form. Go to an attorney, for crying out loud. It doesn't have to be us.
It could be anyone.
Make it an estate planning elder law attorney. There's plenty of them out there. We're one of them.
Right.
Right.
And the cost that they saved is not going to be worth a guardianship.
Oh my! It's not.
It's not even comparable.
Right? It's not worth me going to the hospital. And I said, unfortunately, I don't know if this is going to work. I cannot just spend 2 hours of my day to go to the hospital and then take a COVID test before they allow me in, and then do this and hope that, and by the way, I have to bring a witness, because at that point, I doubt the hospital is going to allow one of their employees to be a witness for someone who probably on that little whiteboard by his bed says something like dementia.
Right.
So it's a complete mess.
And you may go there and he can't sign it that day. And you may have to go back.
So they learned that they have the wrong form 13 months after they got the wrong form. Mm-hmm. I would think out there, it scares me to think about it. There's probably a lot of people out there who think they have a power of attorney that don't have a power of attorney.
Absolutely. And at least they were in the ballpark. They had a New York form. You know, there's kind of generic powers of attorney online. You could download one that's the wrong state. You know, there's all kinds of problems you can get into online.
I have a couple minutes before the break. Another quick power of attorney story. So this is now a family member, where I'm sending them down a power of attorney for them to sign down in Queens. Mm-hmm. And son is going to be agent for dad. Mm-hmm. And the question was, okay, we'll get this signed and we'll go to a notary after it's signed. I said, no, you got to go to a notary when it's signed. I said, okay, for witnesses, could we do my stepmom and my wife? I said, no. Technically, you could have family members involved. It depends on whether or not they have any benefits from the document, or that it's possible for them to receive benefits from the document. Awful idea. Disinterested witnesses mean disinterested witnesses, not my
That's
wife.
Right.
So I was power of attorney for $500. Good thing you didn't pick 1,000 because it was going to be a doozy. John, how close are we to this break? Are we?
Well, let's see. We have about a minute 20 seconds.
All right.
You can do it whenever you want. It is your show.
Well, let's talk a little more. I didn't realize we had so much time. There's more juice in the power of attorney. So, Jamie, the form had a gifting rider.
Okay. Which
that was the form.
Initial.
There's no longer a gifting rider.
Right.
Right. So even if they had done it in June, but they hadn't done it. Mm-hmm. And the things that they were asking us to help them do, the transactions they were going to try to use the power of attorney for, were not going to be covered by the old power of attorney, even if it was done at the right time.
That's right.
Because they didn't do the gifting section. And I know we got, 45 seconds here, but can you tell people how gifting is different than paying a bill?
Yeah, when we get to that point of the power of attorney, most people say, oh, I know. I don't want to give them gifting power. Yeah. And then I have to explain why it's so important.
Yeah.
It's not just gifting. It's transferring funds to become eligible for Medicaid. And that's a strange way of gifting, right? That's what some clients think, I'm not going to do this so he can just, go buy himself a gift.
Right? Exactly. We got Larry that's going to come up after the break,
though.
Yeah,
right.
Larry, hang on there. We'll be back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston. Our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Harry, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office, 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back. Jamie, I love that little music in the middle. I wish I could just have that playing all the time in the office. I feel like I'd be so productive.
Yeah.
Gets me going. Dun. Well, anyway, my name is Dave Kavikian.
And I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And we're back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. We had a caller in the first half. Paul had a wonderful question about a deed from a trust. Pressure's on Larry from Slingerland's as to whether or not he's got a good question. Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Good morning.
What's up?
It's not a good question, but it's a question. we set up an irrevocable trust about 15 years ago. And obviously we're still around, so nothing's happened.
Congratulations on that, by the way.
But we have a trustee and a substitute trustee, and I was curious, is it possible for the person who has set up an irrevocable trust to become a trustee of the trust?
So is it possible? Well, sure, it's possible, but we don't want to do a trust that allows you to be the trustee. In our trusts, you are not allowed to be the trustee. And the reason why is because if the motivation of the trust is to help you qualify for Medicaid, Medicaid doesn't like applicants who have trusts where they're their own trustee. A trustee is the signatory of the trust. It's a little too much direct power. Right? We want you to have puppets that you control. We don't want you to do the show by yourself. We want it to be a puppet show.
The purpose of the trust was not for the Medicaid situation. It was to...
Was it more estate taxes?
Yeah, estate taxes.
Okay.
So then we'd go to the next layer of you know, what financial benefits do you get in the assets? Are you, it's called incidence of ownership. If you have certain rights to the money in the trust, the assets in the trust, the principal either will or will not be part of your estate tax pie. And being a trustee, if you're going to be able to give the money to yourself or your creditors, we're going to ruin that. If it's a third party that maybe has the right to you know, remove money from the trust, let's say, you might be able to get away with it. We certainly want to look at the trust before we gave you a formal legal opinion. Yes, you may or no, you may not. But there's no you know, absolute no or absolute yes on it.
Oh, okay. All right. So we'll make an appointment then?
Sure.
All right.
And remember, since you know, you said you did the trust 15 years ago.
Right.
The exemptions for estate tax in New York, which are currently $6.11 million per person, were $1 million back then. And 15 years ago, I think that the federal was probably $1.5 million, Jamie, maybe $2 million bucks as an estate tax threshold per person with no portability, as opposed to $12.1 million now each with portability. So obviously your assets may have grown. It's a you know, it's about time you come in anyway. We have a lot of stuff to talk about. Let's put it that way.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's time.
Very good, Larry. Thanks so much for the phone call.
I appreciate the answer. Thank you.
I think we have another caller coming, Jamie. But that 15 years, you know, a lot changes in life. You know, 15 years ago, everyone's got like an iPod in their pocket.
Yes,
and they have a flip phone maybe. Mm-hmm. And we're just getting into some of this really smartphone stuff. When it comes to the estate tax thresholds, 15 years was a doozy.
Mm-hmm. It's really changed so much since then. And the reason for doing that trust 15 years ago may not be relevant anymore.
There may be language in it that says that there's a certain amount set aside for Larry's wife, and the formula is already written out there, whereas now that would have unintended consequences that they didn't mean for.
Absolutely. Right.
We do have another caller, third caller. I can't remember the last time we had a third caller, and I'm so happy it's Diana in Albany. Good morning, Diana. How are you?
Good morning.
What's up?
I had a question regarding how much you can give that to someone without them having to pay taxes on it.
So if it's an estate planning attorney, the answer is unlimited. You can give whatever you want to an estate planning attorney without any taxes. go ahead, Jamie.
Yeah, no, the limit is $16,000 per person. But that's the limit for having to file a gift tax return. In reality, you could.
If I give $16,000, the other person does not have to pay taxes.
No, not at all. No.
Okay.
And you could gift up to $12 million, and there's no taxes to pay. So you really could gift a lot of money without having to pay gift taxes.
I mean, it's going to affect my chances when I want to go into a into a nursing home, but have to go into a nursing home.
That's a whole different question. Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
I understand that quite well. Okay, thank you very much.
Well, hold on, Diana, hold on. So just real quick here. So when you give money,
yes.
Even if, let's say you gave $17,000 to Jane Marie, okay?
Right.
The first $16,000 does not need to be reported.
Right.
There will be no taxes that are need to be part of the equation.
Right.
That extra $1,000 you gave Jane Marie does not create a tax either.
Okay.
But wait a minute. It's more than $16,000, right?
And yeah.
What it means is that for your life, you know, so there's no gift tax in New York. It's a federal concept. And the gift tax is, they say it's unified with the estate tax. And a couple minutes ago, we said to Larry, well, federally, the exemption level for estate taxes is $12.1 million. If you gave Jane Marie $17,000, that extra $1,000 you gave her will need to be reported, technically. And it'll mean that when you pass, instead of being able to die with $12.1 million, you could die with $12.099 million.
Uh-huh.
So if you want to give $30,000 to somebody.
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, then it's a moot point. But if you did,
yeah.
Don't be motivated by the tax thing. Be motivated by the second thing you said,
right.
Which is the ramifications for your eligibility for Medicaid.
Okay.
I had
so
this.
I understand that, actually.
Very
good.
Okay. Thanks so much for your phone call.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Jimmy, I literally had this conversation with a client earlier this week where they said, so I'm not going to be able to give. And I said, no, you can absolutely give. Give whatever you want.
Right.
Be motivated by, forget the Medicaid. Mm-hmm. If you want to give, give. Live.
Right.
But there are these ramifications. Mm-hmm. And, you know, keep track of it. Let's not get silly. Let's not give everything. And you know, as long as you don't give more than half your money away in the worst kind of fact pattern, we should be all right.
That's right.
Enjoy. Do whatever you want to. Now, there's other consequences because sometimes people want to, you know, give investments to somebody else. There's capital gains consequences. There's tax basis consequences to it. We would not have a fourth caller, though, if we started talking about capital gains and tax basis at this point.
No, that's right.
So let me get back to this list, Jamie. We got, you did online powers of attorney for $500.
Okay.
You're left with only going to get worse, crisis planning, or back to Paul's call.
Oh, all right. Let's do, it's only going to get worse.
No, boy. Okay. It's only going to get worse, Jane Marie. John, it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, they tell me that, yes.
That's it. That's the whole thing. No, that's not the whole thing.
Jane Marie, I'm scared. Seriously. Tell us.
All too familiar kind of fact pattern. So parent, spouse, someone has some long-term care needs, but they don't have a ton of long-term care needs. They need help, but they don't need 24/7 help. They need a couple hours a day. They need help when they're going to bathe. They need help when it's shopping. It's getting harder in life to deal with stuff. I'm missing more time at work to start to help my mom out.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing.
Right.
It's only going to get worse. Mm-hmm. That person will only continue to get older and likely will need more care over time.
Oh, yeah.
So, what does that mean? Well, whether you qualify for community Medicaid or not, whether it's a good idea or not, whether you're going to use the hours immediately or not is kind of irrelevant because if Kim was here, Kim would say, you're probably not seeing the fruits of that Medicaid application until May, May. Right? Meaning that it's going to take a while for the Medicaid machine to get rolling on it.
Right.
And the benefits that you get, it's not just, was it worth it in 2023? Once you're qualified for community Medicaid, we don't need to worry about changes to the community Medicaid laws and the insertion of a look back period. And as mom or dad or spouse gets worse, you can get them reevaluated for more hours as their needs increase. So sometimes people, and this is because a client said this to me this week, was, well, I don't think we need to do that yet. And that may be that they don't need the help yet. They're not going to go that extra step. But because the application process takes so long, you got to look into the future and say, well, what does the spring look like? What does the summer look like?
Yeah, I think 6 months down the road.
At least. And if it's even if there's a couple hours of benefit now, that's great. We'll take a couple hours of benefit because we know it's only going to be more and more hours down the road. And if we're all dead set on never being in the nursing home, any fall at any time could change our trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
So you take the help you can get. So that's the advertisement for applying for community Medicaid, even when you don't need a significant amount of care, particularly if we have the kind of prognosis, which is, you know, I've been diagnosed with dementia, and it's only going to get worse.
That's right.
And we really want mom to stay at home because dad's at home, et cetera, et cetera. What are your thoughts on all that?
I talked about that. Kim and I talked about that with the client just this week who were taking care of the mom, and she didn't need that much help, right? But they wanted to start the process because they could see that the dementia was getting worse. In fact, the morning before they came in, she had gone out in the morning and walked around, something she had never done before.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, I think they realized the importance that, hey, maybe we don't need a lot right now. The family was checking in on her. But that's, you know, the daughter-in-law was getting tired, you could tell. She's like, it's hard to check in on her before work and after work, and we may need some help, too.
There's not going to be some line you cross where now it's worth it.
Right.
And it's a slow bleed, I guess, is the right way to say it. We do have a fourth caller, though, and I'm very excited because it's Erin in Schenectady. Hey, Erin, how are you?
Hi. My question is, years and years ago, I filled out a I have a 401k and a will. I filled out a will years and years ago, and I just made it out to my brother. So my brother gets everything, just to make it easy. Since then, I have a couple of siblings that I wanted to add to my will. And I also went online on my 401k to add my older siblings to the beneficiary. But you need to have their social security numbers. And I don't have those. So when you have a will and a 401k, does the will supersede, if I have a will made up, and does it supersede the 401k, or do you always have to have a social security number in order to fill out any of that paperwork?
So, yeah, the 401k, a lot of them do require the social security numbers. But to that question, which takes priority, the beneficiaries on the 401k take priority over the will. So if you have just that one brother named as the beneficiary, he would get everything, right? So I think in this case, you kind of have two options, right? One is to get the social security numbers. But if you don't want to do that, you could make the estate your beneficiary and then name your beneficiaries in your estate. I mean, in your will. So the only time the will's going to take priority over the 401k beneficiaries is when you point that 401k to your will and say, follow those directions in the will, which is what you could do here. So if you're, you know, if you leave that younger brother on there as the 401k, he gets everything. And then it's really up to him whether he decides to, you know, share it with his siblings. But if you want it shared with everyone, you know, under your will, you could say that I want my estate shared among all of these siblings.
You could also just change the designation on your 401k, right? You could change a beneficiary on it.
But that's where she needs to get the social security numbers, which she doesn't have, so...
Well, if someone asks me, if it's my sibling, and they ask me, hey, I'm going to leave you part of my 401k, but on the form, here's a copy of the form, I need your social, I'm giving them my social. I'm okay with that. You know what I'm saying? Erin, do you expect that it's going to be difficult to get it? Do you not want to ask them?
Well, I mean, it's just people's private information. They also don't like to give it out.
Sure. I get it. True. You know, once upon a time, your brother probably gave it, and it's you know, you're not. It's nothing nefarious. Maybe if you explain it to your siblings that here's the form, you know, next time you see them, this is what the form's asking for. You know, if you know, here, fill it out and send it directly to the company. I don't even need to see it, type of thing. Maybe that'll work for you because. To me, what Jamie is saying is spot on, right? You could name your estate as the beneficiary, but now what do we have to do?
Probate the will.
We've got to probate a will just to then be receiving the 401k, and there's, okay. you know, some more complicating factors post-death on that, that normally, you know, we're happy that retirements have beneficiaries, because we get to avoid probate mm-hmm. with it.
Right.
So I would, if I'm you, I probably try to get that information from your mm-hmm. siblings, but, you know, I'm not texting them right now, hey, I need your social. Right. I think it's a phone call with an explanation, maybe even a copy mm-hmm. of the form. Good luck, okay?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just something that when you go online with the 401k, that's a question that asks as yep. soon as you try to add somebody. I don't think there's a form to fill out. I think, you know, a paper form. I think it's just something that I go online and enter that information in.
To Dave's point, I would ask your siblings for that, because that is the easier course than the other way, what I was talking about with the will and the probate. I mean, that's an option, but that's a more complicated solution.
Okay.
Thanks so much for the phone call, Aaron. Have a good day.
Bye.
So, Jamie, I was going to give you the choice as to your other things, but we're going straight to Paul's call, because this is the same thing I was going to bring up, which is Paul was asking if everyone didn't hear it. He said, I have a trust, or there's a trust, and what happens when the trust is supposed to end and there's no trustees, and mm-hmm. we look to see the backup trustee, and what's the mechanism to move a property out of the trust to the beneficiary? It's a deed, real basic.
Mm-hmm.
What don't we have to do? We don't have to take a will through probate.
That's right.
We don't need to wait for the court to authorize someone to have the power mm-hmm. to sign that very same deed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We don't have to then open up the estate to creditors for a period of 7 months and administer that estate mm-hmm. under the surrogate's court supervision during that time. We don't have to spend another $3,000-$4,000 at least in attorney's fees mm-hmm. during that time. It's mm-hmm. just a basic deed from the trust to the beneficiary. That's it.
Very
because
easy.
It was a trust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I met with clients yesterday who were longtime clients of the firm, and I actually brought, you know, one of our paralegals in for training about how to do probate.
Sure.
And sadly, there was no probate, but not sadly.
That's
sadly for training purposes, but great for the clients. They had a trust. Everything was in the trust. They had a bank account that had been joint with the daughter to pay bills. They had an IRA that had beneficiaries. So it's a very typical case of someone who set up a trust and made sure everything else had beneficiaries to avoid probate. It was very simple to do.
So let's examine this a little bit. We have about 10 minutes here. Mm-hmm. There's avoid probate. There's protect in case Medicaid's asking how much money you got.
Right.
You can avoid probate with everything, yet still have to deal with Medicaid and their reach.
Right.
Because they don't care what happens when you die. Medicaid is concerned with what happens while you're alive. They're concerned with that snapshot as to what you have mm-hmm. when you apply. So when we have clients who come in, prospective clients, and they say, well, we got this house and you know, we have some money, but the money has beneficiaries on it.
Mm-hmm.
We start talking about trust, and usually I'm talking about the Medicaid trust, but I do mention revocable trusts just in case. And sometimes the client will bring up the life estate deed, which we've talked about ad nauseum. I don't want to mm-hmm. get into it again. But the life estate, it's a deed where you could, you know, avoid probate with a house. You could start to protect the money. I guess we're getting into it. You could protect money or get the five-year look back ticking. But it's a very problematic deed with a lot of it could be very, very short-sighted. But the big piece of it is it only helps on the Medicaid front.
Mm-hmm.
On the house. It doesn't help with any of the other monies. So usually you do a trust because you will, in addition to a house, put some money in. Mm-hmm. Or if the house sells one day because we're downsizing because it's too big, or we're eventually going to be in a, you know, not a nursing home, but a senior apartment or something, or some development, we want all the proceeds, all the money, to still be protected. Mm-hmm. So there's avoid probate. But you want to avoid probate ideally in a way where you're also accruing that five, you know, time towards that five-year look-back period.
Well, so, for example, a client will say, okay, I did put my daughter's name on my bank account, So now half of it's not going to count for Medicaid, right?
Wrong.
Yeah. So you did avoid probate, but you didn't avoid Medicaid.
That's right. And similar to one of our callers who was saying about the gifting, there's, you know, it's three-dimensional chess now. We're not just playing one game. It's not just a game of avoid probate. It's a game of avoid probate and a game of protect your assets and a game of get your money to the right people the right way. And, you know, fortunately, there's a trust out there that kind of checks off all the boxes and still allows you to change your mind on everything. You know, I at my signings, Jamie, we play Family Feud at all my trust signings. And I hand them the trust.
Yours sound much more fun than mine.
It's very fun.
Really?
And I say, okay, 100 people surveyed, top four answers on the board, why are we doing this? And and they got to come up with the answers. And everyone gets the number one answer very easily, to protect my assets, right, towards Medicaid.
Right.
And a lot of them get the number two answer, which is avoid probate, because we want to make things easy.
Right.
There's some sort of sentiment, I just want things to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
That translation, avoid probate. Not many people get the number three answer, which is it leaves money to the right people. It's a really good estate plan, right? Pages and pages of estate plan.
Right.
Who gets it, how, when, why, what happens if it's a grandkid under 30, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But the number four, the main reason you do it is because the trust, our trust, does number one, number two, and number three while you still are the boss. So we play Family Feud, and then when
that's
we go back, we talk about, well, why are we doing a will and this and that, and it's all referencing number two answers, number one. It's you got to make it a little interactive, Jamie.
It's a
tough topic.
I see. That's a good lesson.
But now everyone's going to know the answer to the feud.
I know you're going to have to change. You're gonna have
assuming
to do,
anyone's listening.
You're going to have to do Jeopardy like we're doing. Yeah. You may have to switch it up a little bit.
Well, speaking of Jeopardy, Jamie, the last item on it was crisis planning.
Okay.
And I probably don't even need to say anything. You just take off with it. For the gazillionth time, everybody, there's always something we can do to make things a little better. Sometimes we can make it all better. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's the right kind of fact pattern where we could preserve everything immediately, even though we didn't get through 5 years. It's called getting lucky. More and more, though, if there's some amount of money, we can kind of save about 55% of those dollars through a rather complicated gift and loan plan. My two cents on it, Jamie, and I'll turn it over to you, is I don't know how else to make it so people understand when your loved one happens to be in a nursing home. We didn't plan for it. They're in the hospital. Now they're in rehab. You have to talk to somebody like us.
Right.
There's so many details on it. There's no such thing as, well, you're going to spend down until you qualify. That's like saying you're gonna stop at every toll booth and pay a toll until you get to your destination. There is another way. There's a faster way. There's a cheaper way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's other options out there.
Yeah, you get off the highway and go the local road and get back on.
You could do that. You could have an easy pass, which costs less money. That's not the perfect analogy for it.
No.
But there's always something. It might not be a very good something. I don't view saving half of someone's money as a success, because success would have been doing a trust 5 years earlier. And we saved all their money.
Save 100%. Right? Right.
So I'm not going to be doing cartwheels because we saved half of someone's money. But they may be doing cartwheels because they thought they were going to lose all of it.
That's right.
And now we didn't.
And as you said, it's important that people know that they have options and not think they have to spend it down. And you can't emphasize this enough. And then also the timing of it, right? The timing is really right when that person is going into the nursing home, while Medicare is still covering their care, because then that gives you some time to plan. But you don't have much time to plan. You know, you may think you have 100 days of coverage and then under Medicare, but you don't, honestly.
You have up to?
Up to 100 days.
We had a client, Jamie, where it sounds like they're a candidate for rehab, but the hospital is saying that they don't need it.
Mm.
So they want this person to go to a nursing home, and they're going to be paying you know what from day one.
Right.
Instead of Medicare, paying up to the first 20 days in full if he needed that much rehab. The family's still talking about bringing him home. So it's like, how are you going to bring him home if he can't stand up? He can't stand up unless he does the rehab. He's been off his feet for 5 days. He's, you know, in his 80s. What are we doing here? So those details matter, and the day of the month matters. So the people we talked to this week, they're not eligible in December.
No,
their ship has flown because they had too much money on January 1st. So now we're hustling with some of them to try to help them move money around as part of a crisis plan, maybe move money to a spouse, maybe move money to a disabled child prior to January 31st. So at least we could qualify in February.
There's a sense of urgency there, and I'm just thinking of it because Jess and I were talking about one or two clients who were a little bit laid back about getting us
information. They're lollygagging.
Right, and I'm like, time is money, people. Another month is $15,000, you know.
Yeah, I haven't gotten around to moving the money in that bank. You know, if you said to them, if you go to the bank right now, I will pay you $15,000, they'll probably go to the bank. It's literally, it's figured the same idea.
Because otherwise you're paying another $15,000 to the nursing home because you need to wait another month.
And then people say, well, okay, fine, but you said to me I'm going to private pay for a period of time anyway.
No. Promissory note. Right?
You only get credit for private paying if it's already part of that plan that's been instituted. The plan only gets instituted when all the money has been moved around.
Right.
It's choreographed. By the way, it's really expensive. The trusts are far less expensive than the Medicaid applications and the crisis plans, Jamery. So there's a lot of reasons to be proactive. But, the big point here, I hate to always toot Herzog Law Firm, you have to go to a specialized estate planning attorney, elder law attorney.
Who can figure this out, and not only that, but figure it out quickly and give you the plan to get you where you need to be, you know. We
just happen to be one of them.
We happen to be one of them. We have great paralegals, right?
Pretty good attorneys.
And pretty good attorneys.
Decent attorneys.
That's right.
Have a wonderful weekend, everyone.
Have a good weekend. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.